And in taking this path you have been able to wean yourself from the passion for more and more possessions, for pleasure and for riches. You grew up in poverty, you lived in poverty, and you died in poverty. Your soul now is imbued with these more recent experiences, and all your former passions have been dissolved. I should tell you that at the time when all this was shown to me, I found it impossible to believe that I could have had such a longing for earthly possessions, and I was only interested in knowing what was going to happen to me now. You have been not only a shepherd and the lord of a castle, came the reply, but you have lived on earth many times before. All human beings have to prove themselves, from one life to the next. If they fail their tests, the penalty and the means of bringing about healing at soul level will be that the individual is placed in a situation in which he or she can restore the missing balance. From wealth, from great wealth, I came into poverty. I knew nothing else but poverty. And so the wisdom accorded each individual by the divine spiritual world and the Creator became clear to me as I had now experienced this wisdom in my own life. Other examples were given to me, and I was told I could have paid for my mistakes in other, more severe ways. But God is merciful. He gives to each one, in equal measure, the opportunity to change. Having passed these tests, one would then continue to progress in one's ascent. My guides expressed their hope that I had passed my tests and achieved the restoration of balance they had talked of. For while my soul was no longer thirsting after the riches of the past, I could still find myself faced with severe temptation and fall once more. Whether this would happen or not, I did not believe that I could ever lose myself again in the entanglements of wealth. I no longer valued earthly wealth, it no longer meant anything to me. This my guides saw. Here conditions are different, they said. In the spiritual world you find likewise both riches and poverty, but this is not the kind of poverty which is characteristic of life on earth, neither is it the wealth associated with earthly living. Everything that occurs here is good for all eternity. Here one must try to acquire wealth of a spiritual kind. Then they continued, take a look at yourself, see what you look like in your simple clothes. You must see to it that you are given other clothes so that your appearance improves. Here, however, clothes are not obtained with money or by means of any other system of exchange. Here everything must be earned by the individual himself or herself. In corresponding measure with the efforts you yourself make, you will be given the means to improve your appearance. So, one still buys, but not with money, and not with objects. Things of material value. One does this, rather, with inner values, with noble-spirited feelings, as they are felt and as they are given expression, all according to divine law. Such are our spiritual values of exchange. This, then, was the teaching I received. My guides continued, we have so many errant brothers and sisters. There are so many who dwell here but who still chase after the riches of their past. Unable to part from the possessions they once had on earth, still trying to hold on to things from the past, even long after they have left that world. You have now the possibility to help such individuals. You have to make contact with others, something you have previously avoided. Indeed, I did not find this easy. I was to become free, but this becoming free and talking with others was far from being a straightforward matter for me. I had spoken very little with others on earth, it was just not in my nature. And now my nature was to be changed, I was to start talking to others and engaging them in conversation. My guides promised to give me their support, and at the beginning they would come with me. We met so many who seemed very unhappy. My companion at the time would give me the words to say, and as I encountered each brother or sister, he would point out which individual I was to approach. And then I had to say the words I had been given to say. In this way I tried to learn to be free and to approach others. You mustn't think that one feels spiritually completely free to act. No, indeed, one acts in just the same ways one acted during one's earthly life, taciturn or talkative. One can also disappoint and deceive, pretend to be something one is not. One is no different compared with how one was before. And so I had to go through a time of learning, My entire instruction consisted at first of practicing this simple or very basic thing, being able to approach my brothers and sisters with kindness and goodwill. It was not long before I was free enough to be able to speak to any individual I encountered. This was taken to be an indication of progress on my part, and I was given further instruction in other things. I was to learn to read and write. I was taught other languages. I was also taught about the plan of salvation, about the principles of divine order, and about God's laws. For this is exactly where one begins when one arrives in a foreign country. The laws of the land and how one should behave are the first things to be explained to one. These were, then, the ground miles. This learning in fact came easily to me, and I was surprised at how quickly I learned to write. You will also no doubt imagine that in the spiritual world there is no need for one to be able to write. But, indeed, one does need to be able to write. One needs to be able to write just as well as one speaks. One also learns to draw, to count and to calculate, and to speak and write other languages, too. It is all a matter of one's own aptitudes and interests. One has to be able to converse with the many, many brothers and sisters here, and of course more than one language is spoken in our work. There are many different languages until one reaches the highest level of development where one is able to discern the single all-unifying language. I thus reached the conclusion that what I had missed out on or failed to develop in my earthly life I would have to make good in this world. I was told thus I had already learned before how to read, write, and count, and more besides, and it was for this reason that I found the learning easy. I already had the knowledge buried within me, and it was for me to discover these things afresh, as I were, to bring them to the surface again. What I had once known, and what I had learned, I was able to grasp again in a very short time. And so, this was my time of learning and training. At first, my visits took me to souls who were far from happy. My work was to make them aware of the foolishness of how they were living. I therefore had to learn how to talk to them, to learn how to say precisely the right thing. I had to show these brothers and sisters the path they needed to follow if they were to make further progress spiritually. I was permitted to tell them that I had been a shepherd, and I was also allowed to show them how I had lived. Later, as I completed everything that had been assigned to me to complete, including all that I had been given to learn, my appearance began to change for the better. This meant that these brothers and sisters were able to trust me more readily. They would say to me, "If it's true you were a shepherd, and if you can look as you do today, then there really must be something to what you say." By and by, one after the other, they declared themselves ready to be helped, which was an indication that they were now prepared to accept a new kind of life and willing to give up their old ways. Thus they no longer went off in search of the homes where they used to live and the people they felt a connection with, or they simply ceased pursuing whatever particular thing had held their attention up till then. They made their renunciations, they stopped indulging in their passions, and all because they were now convinced of the foolishness of their past ways. It rarely happens, where these lower levels of development are concerned, that individuals are capable of recognizing for themselves what is right and what is wrong. They need someone else to teach this to them. For they really are like children who need to be given instruction, just as a child does. They feel insecure in their environment. They do not know how to behave or what they can and cannot do. Their teachers, however, respond to them with care and consideration. They guide each one individually and explain the path he or she must follow in order to make further progress. In this way, one after the other, they are won over, when, that is, they have developed sufficient understanding and willingness to change. It is often the case that the exalted spirit beings of heaven are far less able to help these souls than, let us say, spirits who are still in the process of ascending. They tend to be able to gain the trust of the other brothers and sisters dash who may well be on a similar level of development as their own, much more quickly. If exalted beings go to the aid of these brothers and sisters, they will often fail to elicit any positive response from them. The brothers and sisters in question will be overawed, too shy, or simply too inhibited in their presence. It will seem to these brothers and sisters, as if the road to their goal is endless, and the goal itself a pure impossibility. They will not be ready to trust an exalted spirit being, and it is for this reason that beings who are still working on their advancement are preferred for this work. It is the exalted spirits themselves who make the choice to send the less advanced beings to help the unhappy and confused, and they send them off, saying, "Go down, and do your best to win their trust." Equals mix well. Through conversation, they soon get to know one another, and are happy to stay together. Moreover, should a more advanced being gain the confidence of one of these individuals, he is certain to be able to persuade him to leave behind a life of discomfort and distress. Such is the way things go, and such is the work I have been part of, following the directions given me by my guides who have educated and instructed me so carefully in these matters. They sent me out with the following words: "Show them who you were in your former life. Approach them as the shepherd you once were, and do your best to win their trust and lead them higher." This, then, was how I worked, and how I was also very thoroughly taught. The keener I grew to learn about the plan of salvation and divine order, and everything else in which we were given instruction, the greater became my capacity for seeing things through to the end, and the better able I was to work effectively with those it was my duty to help change their ways of thinking. In this way I was able to point them in the right direction. I was involved in this work for quite some time, but exactly how long that was, I don't know. Once one has really settled down in the life in the spiritual world, one no longer asks, "What year is it? How many years went by?" It is simply no longer an issue. One lives for the future and no longer asks what time or what year it is and so on, for no one is interested in such things anymore. Life on earth is forgotten so quickly it becomes unimportant what job one had or what position one held. It no longer means anything whether one was an important landowner or a shepherd. The only thing that counts or is of any significance in the higher realms is the quality of one's inner life. What really matters is what one has achieved in one's earthly life that is of spiritual worth. What has one failed to do? And what is one doing now, in the next world, the life beyond, to make good those missed opportunities or failures? And then, if the work of making good past failures has been successfully achieved, it is always necessary to make sure that one is continuing to move forward and upward on one's path of spiritual ascent. And so, that was how my life was at that time. At present I am no longer involved in helping the unhappy brothers and sisters I have been telling you about. Instead, I am busily occupied in the heavenly workshops. It has been pointed out to me that the time will come when I will have to re-enter life on earth. Yes, indeed, we talk a great deal here about the life we are to enter. I would say we talk as much about our future lives as people on earth talk about dying, for it is something that is inevitable, unavoidable. You on earth can do nothing to avoid death, and we, who are in the process of making our spiritual ascent, can do nothing to avoid reincarnation. We talk a lot about rebirth because we are able to see what can be gained through the experience of living on earth again. We know that rapid ascent can only be achieved through being born into physical life once again. However, there is more to it than that. It is not only to quicken our ascent that we feel impelled to take on human form again. It is much more that, as is made clear to all spirit beings, in every case where one feels strong enough, one has an obligation to help those who are weak and raise them to a higher level. For ascent must be the aim, and all must eventually return to their spiritual home. When one hears of the splendorous and joys of life in the heavenly realms experienced by those who were once on this or that lower level, one cannot but be inspired to redouble one's efforts to move forward. One comes to realize, too, that people on earth are not strangers, but one's sisters and brothers. If, say, a brother, living his earthly life, is working towards his spiritual ascent and gaining spiritual merit by so doing, this brother's gains are also the gains of those living in the beyond. Similarly, the smallest of efforts made by those in the beyond to help people on earth always have their reward. Whenever someone in his or her earthly life performs an act of moral goodness, he or she is always surrounded by protective spirits, by invisible friends, and also by those who have something to learn from that individual's example. Every good deed performed by that person will be a reward for his or her soul. But, in addition, such spiritual rewards are also shared with the unseen friends who accompany and inspire the individual, who have encouraged him or her to perform this good act, and provided the strength needed to carry it out. The reward, which remains the person's own, however, still fully matches his or her own personal contribution to the act in question. Thus, it is important to understand that treasure does not belong only to the person who performed the act, it is shared with that person's spiritual companions. If only people on earth could see this for themselves. Whenever anyone performs any sort of good act, or wherever anyone leads a particularly fine and virtuous life, the soul of the individual in question gains in wealth. And further, all those connected with that individual will gain, they will share in that person's wealth, too. What a wonderful thing it would be for the people of Earth if they could only recognize that what they are silently creating and developing in the depths of their souls serves not only to advance their own salvation but is also wealth that is shared by many other beings besides. As soon as those in the beyond become aware of this, as soon as they see that it is possible for them to accumulate riches and splendors of a spiritual kind through their interactions with people on Earth, then, as a matter of course, each does his or her utmost to help and inspire humanity to act well, to respect and live in accordance with God's laws, to perform many good deeds and refrain from indulging in their passions. It is for this reason that we take a very great interest in the ascent that can be achieved in earthly life. It is just as it is in a family, where a feeling of interdependence predominates, where the father and mother do everything they can to ensure that what they own will one day belong to their children. The parents are not concerned merely to keep what they have for themselves, or see their wealth as something to enjoy here and now. Rather, their attachment to their children extends to their wanting to give the children some part of their wealth, too, and they take pleasure in doing so. The feeling of belonging together is, however, far, far stronger in the spiritual world. No one is a stranger to anyone else, as is the case with people on Earth. To the contrary, here we feel part of each other's lives, we feel close ties among us. And because of this, we take an active interest in each other's lives, and it is a matter of importance to us whether or not others act well. For when others do not act well, they bring a weight of wrongdoing upon themselves, and it is only a matter of time before they are punished. Of course, those who have encouraged the wrongdoer to do wrong have their own reward too. The wickedness of the act belongs equally to them, and they also gain satisfaction and pleasure in behaving badly and causing harm to humanity. How different this is to the pleasure we in the divine world feel when we contemplate the spiritual riches of the men and women of Earth. Once spirit beings engaged on the path of ascent realize what is at stake, they inevitably make serious efforts to act well and from then on view the upward journey in a wholly positive light. They know that only one thing counts, to play their part in bringing the plan of salvation to fulfillment, just as it has been ordained. They know that in doing this they will eventually share in the vast riches that will be there to be enjoyed by all when the goal of fulfillment is finally reached. And so, I have told you about events in my life which have enabled me to restore a balance that was missing hitherto. Whether I will stand the test and remain faithful to this new point of balance in a future lifetime on Earth, I do not as yet know. I would like to think so, however, and I do not intend to assume that I will simply fall back into my old ways. For I am truly concerned that we should all make progress with our ascent, myself no less than the rest. I am therefore ready, here in the spiritual world, to receive instruction and guidance. Whenever beings in spirit respond in this way, their lives became filled with beauty and loveliness. I also have no desire now to return to the life I had before. I would much prefer to remain where I am, however, I know that this is not possible. I know that I have to go back. And for that reason, I make sure that I enjoy to the full the wonderful life I have now, in this world. Of course, I continue to put all my will and energy into completing the work which has been given me to do, for I am not concerned solely with increasing my own spiritual wealth but, much more so indeed, with seeing my brothers and my sisters' wealth increase, too. This is how we share in the lives of those on earth, just as they share in ours. And now I take my leave. May God's blessing go with you. May you find the strength to make good any imbalances while you are still on earth. May you recognize this rebalancing when it occurs through what you have learned now. For doing so, you will find spiritual wealth, and inner joy and contentment, to your own great happiness, and to the great happiness of all in the spiritual work. God bless you. Address by the Ascending Spirit David, received on 5 July 196 I, in German through Beatrice Brunner, Karen, a magnificent home, life and a gratifying activity in the beyond. Personal report, 3 May 1967. God bless. Dear brothers and sisters, my name is Karen. On earth I used to care for the sick and remained unmarried. I want to tell you about this spirit world I entered after my earthly death. Opening my spiritual eyes, I was astounded at what I saw. While on earth I believed in life after death and imagined heaven in my own way. However, I could never have conceived what I now discovered. There was no end to my surprise. I was welcomed warmly and led to live in a magnificent large house. I was deeply impressed and want to tell you of my experience. After a short meeting with my relatives who had passed over before me, I did not see them again for a long time. But I didn't long for them nor miss them. With all the new and exciting experiences, I forgot them almost completely. Following my guides to my new residence, I saw the tall building from afar. There I was to live and fulfill my task. I had never seen anything similar on earth. It is higher than the highest building in your city and about 330 feet 100 meters wide, but not as rectangular and regularity shaped as your houses. From the outside you might compare it with an immense rock with many dwellings inside. The top floor advances somewhat like a terrace. It is not built as if one stone had been put on top of another, it is one solid rock with large windows. From above you can see the street below and a large square inches front of the house and all that happens there. It is impossible for you to imagine the beauty of my new residence. I can hardly describe it in your language. From my window I can see this long road descending a steep decline from the square, framed by rows of houses built above street level. Thus the street appears encased between walls 10 to 16 feet high. Between the front of these houses and the walls are lovely gardens hidden from the street below. While these houses are all similar in shape, the street ends with the square, and the big rock house marks the limit of this particular spiritual plane. On the other side of the rock house are other localities open to the angels, but we in the various houses on our street have no access there and cannot satisfy our curiosity as to what happens there. We were told that other spirits live there. After the steep descent, our road extends far into luminous plains where other spirit beings live. Our big rock house is inhabited by recently returned souls who earned this heaven while on earth. There are also angels who are always very busy, coming and going. They walk through our street, often disappearing all of a sudden when passing into another plane. Beautiful horses drawing exquisite carriages frequently stop in the square below to pick up the most exalted inhabitants, leading them away as if traveling on air. All that can be seen is indescribable. The gardens are full of flowers, tiny and big ones, but it is the huge trees that lend the scenery its magnificence. Their trunks are higher than the tallest poplar on earth, similar to palms. The leaves start from the trunk and form an enormous crown, hiding the end of the trunk. The leaves are all turned skyward to form an immense cup. A light breeze gently wafts the leaves. It is difficult to describe their magnitude, their greatness, so you could understand. What you have on earth seems tiny in comparison with the size of our trees and flowers here. The umbels of some flowering trees look like one single giant blossom swaying fan-like in the breeze, reaching up to receive a multicolored light which brightens everything, houses and gardens, and intensifies the colors of the flowers. It creates a wonderful atmosphere. It is a fantastic place. All those who are allowed to live here have struggled in life and merit the spiritual reward of living in all this beauty. As I told you, there are many dwellings in our rock house. At ground level there is an open passage, except for the back of the building. There are neither walls nor windows. A vast colonnade forms a very big hall where many interesting things are on exhibit. These may be acquired by spirit beings. I will try to explain this to you the same way I was told about it. The houses bordering on the street are inhabited by spirits who work outside these houses. They are newcomers from Earth who have already passed through a comparatively short purification and have visited their friends and relatives. Their temporary residence in these houses permits them to accomplish useful work for the spiritual world. God's messengers walk in the streets inviting these spirit brothers and sisters into the big rock house to see what rewards are waiting for them. Awed by this unusual splendor, many still feel timid and shy before these dignified angels. Hence they must be encouraged repeatedly to come to the rock house. The more courageous ones accept the invitation, others follow, but a few always stay behind and have to be urged to inquire about their reward. The extra reward for their commendable lives. When some return with presents, the timid souls find their curiosity growing and they then follow the angels to the rock house to see what is awaiting them. My task was to stand at the entrance to the big hall and shake hands with everyone entering. At that moment I was able to judge the extent of a particular spirit's merit. In the soul image of each newcomer I saw shades of colors and numbers reflecting precisely their merit. Accordingly, I then handed them a slate with the same colors and numbers on it. With this identification they entered the hall. I was given extensive training to master my new task, and in the beginning a divine being stood by my side to help and survey my work until my judgment was just and faultless. I fulfilled this duty for a long time and it gave me great pleasure. I should explain that some of the slates showed just plain and not particularly brilliant colors, forming diagonals, tines, squares, circles and other designs. Once I got the knack of it, I had no difficulty in choosing the correct slates. I simply had to hand them a slate with the same numbers and colors. In some cases, I gave them a little shine which entitled them to extra merit. Contrary to the practice on Earth, one does not need any money in the spiritual world. I should like to explain the reason for the numbers and colors. Each individual has his or her own particular vibration which is converted into numbers and colors in the spiritual world. Thus vibrations produce resplendent, rainbow-like colors or modest ones. While all inhabitants of this plane belong together, they, nevertheless, differ in their level of development and their colors. The recipients of the slates themselves were unable to see and rate their color reflection even though they examined the slates curiously. Another ascending spirit being then looked at the slates and guided them to the appropriate place in the vast hall. The many items were exhibited, from plain pieces of clothing, perhaps a scarf, to very precious spiritual garments. There were also belts, bracelets, etc. Other spiritual beings led the visitors to the respective place where items were on display, from which they were entitled to choose. They had all recently arrived from Earth wearing modest garments, their interim garments so to speak, which they received on opening their eyes in the new world. Now they were allowed to select prettier clothes according to the merit they earned during life on Earth. They knew already that the outward appearance of a spiritual being is important, for the level of development of a spiritual relative can be seen from his or her appearance. The elevated, spiritually advanced beings not only look harmonious but their attire is refined as well. Others still wear the counterpart of their earthly clothing. These will then realize that those advanced spirit beings wear entirely different garments than human beings on Earth. Hence even mate spirits grow particular about their own books, as were the ancient Greeks and Romans. They all want to wear such dignified clothing and no longer care for the kind customary on Earth. Thus men, too, were attracted to these elegant and embellished garments and curious to find out what they could possibly acquire. Before making a choice, they had a look around the large hall and examined all those precious objects. They had no idea really with what they would be rewarded, and reflected once more on their past life. Modest souls did not expect to be offered precious apparel, but others believed their merits would give them the right to claim the most beautiful garments.